You please stay tuned for Home Fires, and it will be broadcast live today from the Curling Club. That's coming up in a few minutes. And again, I've enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Perhaps the best-known song of Woody's, though, is one that I'm convinced is going to last as long as any song in the world. It'll be known like Auld Lang Syne or something the world over. Again, it was something that actually happened to him. I've sung this song, but I'll sing it again, of the place that I lived on the wild, windy plain, in the month of April, the county called Gray. Here's what all of the people there say. So long, been good to know you. So long, been good to know you. So long, been good to know you. The dusty old dust is a-getting my home, and I gotta be drifting along. The dust storm came and it came like thunder, dusted us over, it covered us under, blocked out the traffic, it blocked out the sun, and straight for home all the people it runs. And so long, it's been good to know you. So long, it's been good to know you. So
And so long, it's been good to know all of you. This is KUAC-FM in Fairbanks Public Radio for Alaska's Interior. Time for Home Fires now.
Now to Eric Joswick, who is the, what is your role with the Curling Club this year?
Well, this year I'm the treasurer of the International, and I'm also a retiring member on the Board of Trustees.
How many members does the Curling Club have now?
We have about 250 current club members, and there's about, it's pretty close to 50-50 between men and women.
This club was founded in 1905, which makes it the oldest sports club in Alaska. Is that correct?
That's right, yes.
And you had your first rink in 1908. I saw in the paper last week that it was on the Northern Commercial Company dock.
They used to, in the early 1900s, when the club first got going, they did curl on the ice in just about where the Cushman Street Bridge is today.
So they cleaned off the ice there, or did they have to put some water on it to make a special surface?
Well, curling ice needs to be as level as you can possibly get it, and I'm sure that they did something to put some water on it to try and smooth out the river ice.
When was this club built? When did you move into this club?
1962, this club was first built. Started out with half of the existing building that you see today, and in 1964 they built on to the original club here and expanded it to twice its size.
Curling has a sort of very unique character and personality. Could we start with sort of the basics and describe curling? What is curling?
Well, it's a sport that's played on ice, and the playing surface itself is 15 feet 6 inches wide and 146 feet long. At each end of the sheet there's a target. It looks like a bullseye. It is 12 feet in diameter, and the object of the game is to get your stones closest to the center of the target than anybody else on the opposite team.
Okay, and if it's, does it count less points? I mean, how is it scored?
Well, it's scored a little bit, say, like horseshoes, in that you can score 1 point for every stone that's within the 12-foot circle. However, they have to be closer than any of your opponent's stones.
I see. All right. How many stones does each rink have?
16. There's 16 total, 8 per side.
8 per side.
Right.
A team is called a rink.
Correct.
And there are 4 members per rink.
That's correct.
And they each have 2 stones.
Yes.
What are the, are there different kinds of positions on a rink? I mean, there's a skip. What do these different players do?
Okay, there's basically 4 different positions: the lead, the second, the third, and the skip. The skip is the person that stands at the end of the ice where the rocks are being thrown toward. And he's kind of the, he or she is kind of the captain of the team. They decide, that person decides which shots are going to be thrown and develops the strategy of the particular end. The lead throws the first 2 stones for a rink. The second throws the next 2. The third throws the third, the next 2 stones, and then the skip throws his or her stones. And when that, while that person, the skip, is throwing the rocks, the third goes down to the other end and holds the broom.
I see. Okay. When they throw the stones, they sort of take a gliding motion along the ice. And there's one man going now, and he's practically laying down on the ice, sort of scooting along on his side. Is that a matter of personal style, or?
There is a what's called a slide delivery with the stone, and if you're right-handed, then you'll on the bottom of your left foot you'll have a real slippery surface, usually some kind of Teflon or a ceramic that slips on the ice real easily.
They're testing out the ice now. We're just in the middle of changing rinks. This is a new, what do you call it?
New game.
New game. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know how much of the ordinary vocabulary is applicable and how much isn't. At any rate, they have these little sheets of plastic or Teflon that they put on their shoe to make them slide.
Right.
And as you say, it depends, which foot you put forward depends on whether you're right or left footed.
Footed or handed, yeah.
Which way you lead off. So it's a game of strategy.
Yes, very much.
Sort of like cricket is also a game of strategy in some ways. You don't know anything about cricket.
I don't know anything
English
about cricket.
Instead of Scottish. Okay. What are your sort of strategy options that you have? Okay, let's describe what's happening here. We have the stone being thrown, and they were sweeping vigorously.
Mm-hmm.
What just happened?
Well, the on sheet one, the gentleman threw his stone down into the house and hit an opponent's stone right straight on, knocked the opponent's rock out, and his stayed just right in front of where the opponent's used to be.
So that was a very desirable result.
Yes. Now I'm assuming that the next team here, the Stone Redstones, will probably try and do the same thing.
It seems to be. When they are sweeping vigorously, it speeds up or extends the distance?
It extends the distance. It does not speed up the distance that a rock. Let me start again.
Okay. It's a real challenge trying to describe this verbally. That was actually one of the things that intrigued me about coming out here today is because it is such a unique sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And quite animated, although quite all in a quiet sort of way.
Right.
Okay. What's happening here?
Well, it looks like they're trying to hit the red stone again, which they did. However, they weren't able to hit it quite in a direct line enough, and they also knocked one of their blue ones out at the same time.
Which is not what they wanted to do.
Probably not. sometimes you do want to knock your own out, but that's kind of an unusual situation when the game is real close and maybe it's getting down towards the end of the game, where you wouldn't want to leave one of your stones in the house where the people could
knock it out at the last minute.
Well, no, not knock it out, but they could use that as a backstop.
I see.
And put their rock closer to the center, but up against yours. And then it's very difficult for you to try and take a rock out of play.
The person that's throwing the stone seems to be incredibly concentrated. And the gentleman who just threw the stone, he was actually following this. After he'd released it, he sort of continued to slide behind the stone for sort of half a sheet's length, or half the ice length. How many teams do you have competing in this bonspiel?
We have 89 rinks, of which 27 are women and the rest are men.
And how does the competition go? You play until you lose, or how exactly is it organized?
Another difficult question.
There's nothing straightforward about curling.
No, it's curling is a very easy sport to learn, but very difficult to master. But anyway, back to the what they would be called draws. Everybody starts out on an equal basis in the first event, also called the A event. If you lose a game, you go to the B event. If you lose your second game, then you drop from the B event to the C event. If you lose your third game in a row, you drop from the C to the D.
Uh-huh.
And if
so, it's tiered.
Right, that's correct. And if you when you lose in that particular case, if you lose a fourth game, then you're out. Everybody that's here on the men's rinks are guaranteed four games because there are four events.
A, B, C, and D.
Correct. On the women's side, there's an A, B, C event, so all the women's rinks are guaranteed three games apiece.
So even if you can't get it together, you will play a minimum of four games during the course of a bonspiel once your rink is signed up?
Yes.
Okay.
Four for men, three for women.
Three for women.
Yeah.
And you stay in the A tier only as long as you win?
That is correct.
And so any loss is a reduction in tiers?
Yes.
Are from A to B to C and to D. How is your rink doing?
Fortunately, our rink is still in the A event. We won our first four games, and we're now in the semifinals of the A event.
How many more games will you have to play? Presuming that you keep winning.
Well, it's our bonspiel here is also a double elimination tournament at the same time for people in the A and B event. If we win, we would need to win two more games to finish up in first place in the A event undefeated, and then we'd have to play at least one more game because a team could still come in through the loser's bracket and back around to challenge us for the championship. They'd have to beat us twice, but that's been done before.
So you'd have to be beat twice to lose at
right.
this point. Are the other rinks in the semifinals also undefeated? Or
Yes, right.
So everyone's undefeated, but in order to be to lose, you'd have to lose twice.
That
so
is correct.
How many more games are you going to play? Could be
hopefully three.
Three, okay.
Yeah.
It's very much a family place here. There are children that have just arrived. You have a kitchen here. People sign up to take turns running that kitchen.
Right. The Fairbanks Curling Club is basically an all-volunteer organization from its club members. We don't pay anybody to clean or to manage the place or work on the ice to keep it in good condition. It's the 250 members that volunteer a little bit of their time during the curling season to help out. And of course, our international Bonspiel is always one of our big events. It is our big event of the year, where we make a little money that keeps the club going, and so naturally everybody kind of pitches in and helps out wherever they can.
How long does this curling season go?
We start generally the first week of October, and this is the Bonspiel, the International Bonspiel, is always our last weekend of the year. Tomorrow night, after the championship games are over, the compressors will be turned off in the back room, and then the ice will melt for the summer.
Has it been a good season? Have you enjoyed this one particularly? Or?
Well, I always enjoy them. Due to the all-volunteer nature of the club, I think that all the club members look forward to the end of the season all the time. because there
are. So you're not regretting it at this point?
No.
That it's almost over?
No, not at all.
You're willing to take a little rest?
Right.
The rink? No, it's called a sheet, I'm sorry. What is this area called with all the ice on it?
Oh,
the arena. The club.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very festive. It has a bunch of signs of sponsors, and it's got a Canadian flag, an Alaska flag, an American flag, and the circles are all red and blue, and the sheets or lanes are designated. Uh-huh. And there's a tremendous quantity of Labatt's beer and Michelob and so on lined up in the middle between three sheets on one side and the other additional three sheets on the other. That's very handy. It serves as a beer cooler as well.
Right, and you know, because you get thirsty when you're.
Is beer drinking a big part of curling?
It's a part. I wouldn't say it's a big part. It tends to be more of a part of the sport at Bonspiels because there are, like with 89 rinks here, there's probably half of them that are here strictly for the competitive aspect of the curling sport, and then the other half are here for kind of a social time and to meet old friends and curl too.
Right. So there's a variety of attitudes. Some people are very competitive about it. Have been playing seriously and competitively for years, and other people just like the socialization, or they like the curling, but it's just more casual with them, social.
Right.
And you're in the competitive category.
Both.
Both. You like both parts of that.
Yes.
How many, we have teams from, name a few of the places that we have rinks visiting here.
Visiting rinks, we have approximately 10 teams. From Anchorage, we have about 24 teams from Whitehorse, one from Haines Junction, one from Destruction Bay, four from Dawson, one from someplace in Alberta, and there's about 10 rinks from Inuvik and Klavik.
So obviously people travel a good distance to compete. Do you do a lot of traveling to compete?
Not as much as I'd like to. I try to get out of town to at least one other Bonspiel during the year. And the last 6 years I've always made the International Bonspiel in Whitehorse, which was always the weekend before ours. So for people
this
like myself.
This is quite a marathon.
Yeah.
Bonspiel, first in Whitehorse. And one of the other unique things about a Bonspiel is that it goes around the clock, 24 hours a day?
Well, ours does. Some of the other ones don't. It depends on how many sheets of ice the individual clubs have, and also how many teams get signed up. For example, last week in Whitehorse, there were about 75 rinks, and in Whitehorse, there's the Whitehorse Curling Club and also the Tokini Curling Club. Each has four sheets. We have six here in Fairbanks, so they have a little more leeway in the scheduling games, and therefore they don't do too much curling between say 3 a.m. and 7 a.m. Where here in Fairbanks, with only six sheets in and the 89 rinks this year, we have to curl around the clock for 4.5 days, basically, to get all the games in.
What you hear in the back, Carla is out in the area where the ice is, and you hear those brooms slapping in front of the stone. Sometimes I have heard through my earphones the sort of crinkle. It's almost a crinkle sound as the stone moves across the ice, and of course a lot of animated encouragement on the part of the team members who are sort of watching the stone move down, saying go, go.
Go. Yeah, a lot of times you'll hear the skip yelling at the sweepers to sweep harder, depending on how critical the shot is and which direction the rock is traveling.
How do you decide who is the skip on a rink?
Well, generally you just get people together and you kind of pick out a skip as you're forming the team. It's not a matter of, four people getting together and tossing a coin and one decides they're a skip. It's generally the person that is a good shot maker but also knows the strategy of the game.
Someone has a little more experience?
Well, not also, necessarily.
Also skill?
Yeah, skill, right. But knowing the strategy of the game is one of the points that is key in determining who is to be skipped.
Because I noticed in the article that I read in the Newsminer last week that they said that the skip positions, it sounded like whaleboat captains. They had to, when there were fewer rinks in Fairbanks, it sounded like they had to wait till the skip retired or died off to get a skip position opening.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not quite true nowadays. I'm sure it was in the past, but there's more people that are interested in the competitive aspect of the sport of curling now. So it's consequently there are more teams and more positions available.
Would you like to go and find some other of the club members here to have them join us, and I'll try and describe a little more of the action while you go round up some extra, find some of those Canadian competitors or some of your other club members. I'll try and keep things, don't be too long,
yeah.
Inexpert as I am. There are probably about 30 or 40 rink members out there playing at this moment. Everyone seems to concentrate intensely. Right now, what you just heard was a red stone hitting a blue stone absolutely out of the bullseye area. There doesn't seem to be any preferred costume for this. We have everyone... There's a variety of clothing styles, everything from quite heavy sweaters and leather shoes to people wearing sort of T-shirts and jeans. So I guess it depends on what kind of cold comfort you have as to how many clothes you put on. But it's extremely casual. And it's sort of slow paced in a way. There doesn't seem to be a tremendous amount of hurry between shots or between sweeps, the vocabulary of this is such an odd one that it's difficult to describe. People, the men who are playing now are of all ages, everything from really teens to quite elderly men. I'm going to let us catch some sound here. Hello, welcome to Home Fires Radio Show.
Oh, hello. I'm Bill Grider, the president of the company.
Oh, wonderful. You, were you interviewed in the paper?
Yes, I
for
was.
Last week?
Yes, I was.
You started curling when you were 13.
Yes.
And we're saying you were looking forward to the time when you could say that you had curled for 30 years, like some of the old-timers
yeah,
30 around
years or
here.
40 years or something. Maybe I'll be good by then.
Do you take it up at 13 because you come from a family of curlers?
No, we just moved to Anchorage from Missouri. It was kind of a strange thing. One of the guys from the Anchorage Club had come to the junior high I was going to school there in, and given a little talk about curling, and started going down on Saturday afternoons, and liked it, I guess, and got good at it and stuck with it.
Do you think that there's some special, certain kinds of athletic events require certain body types, and some people just have natural skill for certain kinds of sports? Do you think that's also true with curling?
Oh, I think so. I think it doesn't really require a certain body type like a
ballet,
many sports like ballet or basketball
or swimming.
But it certainly requires a lot of coordination, and it takes a lot of concentration during a game.
And it's actually, this may seem an odd word to use to describe it, but it seems very graceful to me. Maybe
well,
it's because
it is if people are doing it right.
People are moving on the ice, but the movements are very fluid.
Right. It's just because everyone's sliding on the ice. You're not running or anything, just sliding down the ice.
No jarring movement. Can, in fact, you be injured in the process of curling, or it's unusual?
It's unusual. Of course, you're playing on a sheet of ice, and it's slippery. Uh-huh. And people slip and fall fairly often. They rarely get hurt.
Did you happen to watch what just happened there? The two sweepers just sort of stayed ahead of that stone the entire distance. Was that because they really knew it was on target and was going to hit the blue stone? Or
it was because they probably because they knew the shot was close, and they were ahead of the rock and in position ready to start sweeping in case they needed to.
So, in fact, there's a stone coming toward us now. You can make some determination on what it is going to do, or you just watch it as it happens?
Well, you have to watch the rock as it's coming down the ice, but you have a pretty good idea of how fast it's going and how much it's curling. In this case, the rock was going too fast and went through the house.
Uh-huh, and came out the other side.
Came out the other end.
When they make the sweeping movements, can they change, can they cause it to curl or to change direction with that sweeping?
The only thing you can really do with sweeping is it polishes the ice, makes it a little slicker. So if a rock's going too slow, you can make it go further.
Uh-huh.
If a rock is curling too much, you can make it go straighter.
I see.
That's the only control you get from sweeping.
You straighten it out, but you can't cause it an increased curl.
No.
And the curl, so then the curl is put on by the person who throws the stone.
Yes.
It's sort of like a pitch in baseball, that it can have a curve on it or a...
I'm trying to...
We're watching a stone just come almost out of the house, but it is on the edge. Would that count? Is that...
Yeah, that's that rock's eligible to count.
That's...
Yes.
And it's in a sort of safe place? Unlikely that someone else would hit it out or...
It's in a good spot. It can be taken out.
Uh-huh.
But the other team isn't playing to take it out.
One thing that I still don't understand about this strategy is, well, I suppose, since it seems to look to someone who doesn't know very much about curling kind of random, it probably changes from game to game or depending on what the opposing rink, what their style of play is as to whether you want all of your stones in the middle of the house or whether you would use a different strategy.
Oh, yeah, you know, what the ultimate objective is to get your rocks closer to the center of the house than any of the opponent's rocks.
Uh-huh.
But obviously, over here, the team's playing off to the side of the house. They haven't even got a rock close to the center. The strategy depends a lot on who you're playing and what situation you're in a game, whether you're ahead or behind. It also depends a lot on whether you're making your shots or the other team's making their shots. So you can have the best strategy in the world, and if you call the shot and don't make it, it doesn't do you much good.
They are wildly sweeping now, three of them, because the stone was moving very slowly and, in fact, stopped quite a bit short of
the house.
The house.
Yep, no, they just threw it too light.
Just threw it too light. You said that you met your wife at the curling club?
Yes, I did. I guess it was 3 years ago. And she came down at the beginning of the season and was practicing, and several of us teach clinics for beginners and stuff. Saw her down here and mentioned she should take the clinic and stuff, and she did, and asked her out for a date, and we started curling together, and I got married a year later.
Well, you have, it's clear that you have a real common interest then, if you...
Oh, yes.
And I was saying before when I was talking to Eric that it's a real, seems to be a real family activity. There are children here and older people and younger people, and it's a sort of multi-generational activity, which is very nice aspect.
It certainly is. You know, someone can start curling at 12 or 13 when they're large enough to move the 40-pound rock, and they can people curl into their 80s.
You have a lot of children, who adolescents, who are here learning to curl as part of this club activity?
We have some, but not as many as we'd like.
Hello.
Hello.
What is your name?
I'm Peggy Martin.
And you are on the U.S. Women's Championship team.
Yes,
that
I am.
Correct.
Right.
How long have you been curling, Peggy?
I've been curling. This is really my fifth season, curled about 4.5 years. I was laid out for a little while, and so about 4.5 years.
You liked it immediately when you started? You've gone a long way in 5 years.
Liked it immediately, similar to Bill's story. I met Jim Dunlap right here at the curling rink, and the first time I ever threw a rock was on the Chena River when they had... short bond spiel down there underneath the Chena River Bridge, and started there and enjoyed it so much that I had some friends encourage me to come down, Barb and Leroy Rich, and they showed me how to deliver a stone and kind of went from there. And my trainer, if you will, has been Jim Dunlap. He's curled for probably 8 years, and he's been working with me since I've been curling, being my instructor, if you will.
Is that like kind of a club professional? You have a... Does he train a lot of people here, or is he...
I don't think he's a professional in that sense. We have some Curl Canada instructors, and he's not one. As a matter of fact, he'd be a real good candidate. As far as his form and delivery and so on, he probably would learn a lot from that. Along with the instruction from Jim, I did take the Curl Canada class when I was a young... in the first... part of curling, and I think that's really important too, because you learn the form, then you're not fighting, you're not out there fighting your body to try to curl well. You know how you're supposed to deliver the stone, you know how the slide is, you know the rhythm of this and so on. So in addition to the Curl Canada class, then just working with Jim as far as trying to think on the ice. In other words, when you're out there, it's not just do whatever the skip says, but you do also have to watch the ice yourself so that you know how heavy you need to throw it, if it's going to curl a lot or not curl a lot, so you can judge the weight by that. So, and then this is really my first year is playing third, which is vice skip, and you need to know then from the skip's impression of what the ice is, you need to be able to know whether or not it's curling a lot, because you're back there calling her shots, okay, and the sweep on her shots.
How long have you been curling together as a team?
This was really our first year as a full team. Last year, Bev, Katrina Sharp, and I curled together with another lead. And this year we asked, I'm sorry, it was Jerry Evans that curled with us last year, and Katrina joined us this year then as a lead. So this is the first year that we've all four curled together.
You just sort of hit it off.
Hit it off.
Is it... Mm-hmm. Is there some kind of special way that four individual players join to make a team? I mean, sort of the combination of your skills and abilities that helped you win the championship, that someone can be just as good but not have the sort of cohesiveness?
I think that what I've seen in this club is some very good curlers curl together. And that cohesiveness may not be there. And I think that's one thing that helped us go as far as we did.
Very
is
compatible
the fact that,
skills.
Right, the four of us together, you hear a lot. I mean, you assume that when four people are out there, they're working as a team. But there is, I think, a little bit of magic when four people's personalities just kind of hit it off. We, from the very beginning, tried to work with one another as far as... judging the sweep when two people are out there, you know, figuring out sweeping together. That's a real skill. Otherwise, you can run over one another. And so I think just the four of us hit it off real well.
Watching people sweep together, I mean, sometimes people have, just having watched this morning for a couple of hours, some of those teams have very coordinated sweeping that they do, the two individuals that are sweeping, that sort of same arm movements at the exact precise time, and other people have actually quite different sweeping styles that are sweeping together.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is important to learn right off the bat is you'll find, for example, that our team, Jerry Evans, sweeps on the opposite side, and Katrina and I sweep on the same side.
Together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's something that, again, you work out who's the strongest sweeper so that they sweep closest to the rock, and you just work those kind of things out, and that's some of the things we tackled as a team, is working on those fine points.
Is this the first time that you've competed nationally this year?
Yes, it is. Different combinations of us, like Bev and Jerry and I, and a different lead last year, did try, and we didn't make it out of the state playdowns, so it's a first for any one of us. It's the first time Bev Berklid has made it out of the club, so to speak. In other words, to make it out of the state of Alaska to play in the national competition. And so she was really thrilled, of course, by winning that and having the opportunity to go play the national level. And then, of course, we were just really tickled to take that one.
How many bond spiels did you have to compete in to make it up to the national
level? We have a club playdown here in the club to see which two teams go. Okay. And then we play against Anchorage, and usually we have four teams total, two teams from Anchorage, two teams from Fairbanks. And they play around Robin, so every team plays every team. And then the winner of that goes to the Nationals.
I'm talking with Peggy Martin, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
who is a member of the U.S. Women's Championship Curling Team, and we're coming to you live from the Curling Club. We have a lot of ambient sound here. We have Carla, for those of you who might have just joined us in the middle, we have Carla out on the ice. There is competition being, which is going on now. This is the 50th anniversary, and it's an international bondspiel, and they've been playing continuously since Wednesday. And so now we are getting to the sort of final time. How is your team doing here?
So far, our team has won all of our games. And so our next game is at 9 o'clock this evening. If we take that game, then we're in the finals tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock.
How is the competition here at this bondspiel compared to the competition that you had at the national finals?
At the national finals, I would say very similar. On the national level. As a matter of fact, the Canadian teams that we played, the first three games were Canadian teams. They're very good. And Margaret Cox, that we played the last game, that's the first American team we played, has three curlers that are have not curled as a team with her before. And so they're kind of a young team, if you will. But the competition here is very similar to on a national level. When you get to an international level, the United States has a lot to learn.
Is that I was reading a little article about curling, and it said it's a sport that originated in Scotland. We seem to be featuring a lot of things on the Home Fires radio show that originated in Scotland, I think quite by accident, because I didn't realize this was originally a Scottish sport. Is it a specialty of the Northern European countries or all over Europe?
Eric, can you help me on that, Eric? What do you think?
We're not sure, but it seemed like there was the people who were, the teams that were winning were Canada and Scotland, Switzerland, Sweden, mm-hmm. Norway. So I was,
yeah, and Italy and France and those countries all do compete.
So it is a really, it's all over Europe. Yes. As a big mm-hmm. competitive sport.
Canada, I was looking at a map in Sweden, as a matter of fact, on the history of curling and where the saturation is. And Canada and the European countries, of course, outnumber almost any of the others as far as curling goes.
Well, since the Fairbanks Curling Club was founded in 1905, obviously it's been popular in Fairbanks for a long time, but do you think it hasn't been as common a sport for the lower 48, except maybe in Minneapolis in Minnesota? Or it's just, do you think, beginning to catch on now?
I think that as the U.S. competition gets better, in other words, we're probably pretty young at curling in this sport, except for Alaska, that we'll find that the clubs begin to grow. Right now, a lot of the rinks outside share time and space with hockey rinks, ice skating rinks, and that sort of thing. So, and as a matter of fact, that's true in Europe also. We found one club that had one night a week when they would curl, and one night a week just doesn't give you a lot of time on the ice.
Hard to really get that international competitive edge,
right,
curling that infrequently. How often do you curl here?
I curl. I try to curl during the season. Try to curl at least two games a week, and very often come down and sub. In addition to that, it's a nice relaxing time to come down on my lunch hour when nobody else is here and just go out and throw some rocks and try to keep in shape and that sort of thing.
So you do some definite practicing as well as your weekly games.
Yes, Ahan, I think that's really important for anybody who wants to really be competitive. Is just like any other sport, you need to train for it and you need to keep that practice. Something that is a new concept for the United States, which I think, again, will really improve the curling, is the concept of a coach. Almost every other sport that you see has a fifth member or has a coach.
Right.
And this year, for the first time at the national event, we introduced the concept of having a coach for the U.S. women's teams. There was a lady who went over this year with us as our coach, and that's really good. It was kind of an experimental thing this year. She's hopefully going to apply for that position. It'll be a paid position each year, and hopefully she'll be working on going for that next year and make it a reality. And in that case, she would be working with the winning team at least 4 weeks in preparation for the international event. And I think that would really help our U.S. curling a lot, too.
Where was the national competition held?
National competition was held in Chocolate Town, USA, which is Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Did you get some Hershey's Kisses?
We sure did. As a matter of fact, I have what I tried to do is to buy enough to bring back and promote Hershey just a little bit because it was such a fun town.
They sponsored this traditionally?
No, it changed. The location changes, rotates every year. People usually have to kind of stand in line a couple years as far as the locations go. They're bidding a couple years in advance. And it takes about 2 years to prepare for a national event like this because the hosting, setting up the all of the fine things, arranging for dinners and places to stay and transportation and just to make it a really nice event for women.
How many rinks competed in the finals at Hershey?
We had 8 women rinks that competed there, and that was really fine competition, too.
Do you like some time for the national finals to be in Fairbanks?
Yes, I
would. Is that a possibility?
I think it would be a possibility because we have a pretty good size curling club here, and I think we had 5 sheets of ice in Hershey, and since we have 6 here, it would be easy to accommodate teams.
Is that a factor that stays pretty much the same, the condition of the ice? Is there any home ice advantage, or does the ice feel different in different places? Is that?
Definitely does. When we were curling in Hershey and again on the national level, we found that the ice was much keener, which means keener means that the rock travels faster than...
So you had to adjust.
Right, we had to adjust. And this year, I think, our ice is coming closer to the kind of ice that we curled on in the national and the international with the help of some new equipment. And
which is preferable. Harder ice. Is that why it's keener? Because it would be harder? No, colder?
Our ice maker here.
Thanks, Peggy.
Yes.
Have you learned a lot about ice making since you started curling, Eric?
Well, I've been the ice maker now for 3 years, and I still don't have any idea on how to make things happen or not make them happen. Frozen water seems to be extremely difficult to try and correct, if you will. And every sheet is different. All six of our sheets here in the club, a rock will curl more on one than the other with the, you know, with the same weight that you throw or the same direction, and everyone's different. You won't find any two sheets anywhere that are the same.
Do you have one or two that you prefer here? Oh no, stay just a minute more.
No, not at all. I don't think there's not a whole lot of difference on any of the sheets in the respect that you'd prefer to curl on one or another. It's just getting used to how they curl and then varying your game so that that it conforms, that you know you can do something on a particular sheet of ice that you might not be able to on the other, but it really doesn't matter if one is different than the other.
I see. So you just adjust automatically.
Yeah.
Some do.
You try. That's the sport, is trying to adjust.
Tell us a little bit about your time at the international competition.
Okay, we were there a full week, and along with the curling, we curled on an average of 2 games per day, and then they were scheduled so that we would have a little bit of time in between. Chocolate Town, USA. We found each of the teams were really very hospitable type folks. The women in Hershey, Pennsylvania, who were really the ones who put this whole thing together, as I say, worked for 2 years on setting it up. They hosted us a dinner at one lady's house, and if you can imagine, 32 women plus all of the sponsors and interested folks, she really
put
had
on
a fine dinner. They also took us to a restaurant that catered just to us that evening, which was really very nice, and they had fixed a traditional Pennsylvania Dutch dinner, which was really kind of neat. We each had our own transportation person that kind of looked after us, and that was really kind of neat because we adopted Martha and Henry as our mom and dad. They were an older couple and just really kind of neat. They were there at all of our games, took us anywhere we wanted to go if we wanted to run downtown or whatever, and they just treated us really special.
So this is one of the nice byproducts is to make new friends all over. And then you went, did you come home before you went to Sweden?
Yes, we were home about 3 or 4 weeks, right in that, before we went to Sweden.
And how long were you in Sweden?
We were in Sweden just a week. However, we left a little bit early and spent 3 days in Denmark. There's a 10-hour time difference between Fairbanks and Europe, and so we were advised, and well advised, I might say, to go over there 2 or 3 days early so that we adjusted not only to the time difference, but also to some of the customs and some of the, like the electricity there is different, the money, of course, is different. We didn't know if there were what kind of language problems we might run into and so on. And so it was just getting used to the difference over there so that you didn't feel like you had to think about everything. The pressure was off as far as being able to relax in their community and feel like our bodies had caught up with time changes. All in all, we were abroad 2 weeks, and it was great.
Did the club help you pay for that trip?
The International Curling Federation pays the travel and the hotel for all of the teams that compete. So they paid for Canada and the U.S., of course, to go over, and then, of course, for all the European teams to travel to Sweden. In addition to that, our club was really very generous, and the time that we were going to spend in Denmark prior to actually curling in this competition was not paid for by any organization. So the club was very generous with giving each of us some money to help defray the cost of the paying for our own rooms and transportation and meals and that sort of thing.
Well, you really put Fairbanks on the map. I'm really proud that Fairbanks can call itself the home of the National Women's Championship team, and I wish you luck in future competitions. With this winning streak you've been on, you're planning on staying together as a team?
We'd really like to, yes. Bev had talked about retiring this year from curling, and part of that is because her husband, Billy Berkland, who is also a curler who's been in one of the top curling men's teams, had kind of gone away from regular annual competition, and so she was going to try to phase out, too. I do think, though, that she has some renewed interest in curling. So I hope that we can continue as a team, because, of course, the longer you curl together, the better you become as far as knowing each player and being able to call shots that they can make if you've got an advantage that way.
There's some talk of making curling an Olympic sport, part of the Winter Olympics. How is that coming along?
I understood that there was going to be some... not competition in the next Winter Olympics, but
a demonstration
game. Right. Mm-hmm.
So, and then maybe presumably after that, it will in fact become a formal part of the competition. Would you
I'd
be
like
interested
to see
in that?
Absolutely. Yes. Where do you go from playing in international competition? It just seems natural to me, and I think it would do a lot for the sport, too, as far as getting young people interested. And of course, that you need that young group interested in curling to keep people curling.
Well, we have had some sort of pounding sounds throughout the program, and that is a very animated group of people upstairs sitting around a table with a guitar, singing songs and banging their feet. People are coming and going. I made a reference to the kitchen before. There've now been a change in the kitchen staff, and you were there earlier cooking.
Yes.
And so on. So people are eating these wonderful big cinnamon buns with butter slabbed on the top, and you're cooking breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
You have been, and then you switch to lunch.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. Along about this time, we'll be gearing up for hamburgers and hoagie sandwiches and cheeseburgers and chili and hot dogs and that sort of thing.
And then you do another shift again for dinner.
I think we probably keep pretty much the same menu through the dinner time. In years past, we've done it differently. Each year, the kitchen is under the supervision of a chairman, and they kind of set up how things are going to be. The breakfast is one of the most, I think, popular as far as regular kind of things. In the past, like I say, we've had geared down from lunch and then had like a spaghetti feed or a chili feed and that sort of thing, and that works very well. But each year, it's kind of up to the chairman to decide how much and what they're planning to do. And it is a lot of work, and we've got to give credit, I think, to the people who organize all of the things that you see behind the scenes.
There was just an announcement as we were on the air that there was a shuttle bus going to some luncheon, so also you do some entertaining of the visiting teams. There's a women's luncheon and so on and so forth. So that there's lots of social activities in addition to your whole schedule of competition.
Right. And the ladies' luncheon is kind of a tradition. It gives all the women curlers an opportunity to get together on a social level and kind of get dressed up and or go in their curling uniforms or whatever.
Is that what you're on your way to now?
Yeah, pretty soon. Yeah. And it gives them an opportunity to talk to one another, to renew old friendships, people that they curled against years ago, or I noticed a couple women from Dawson that we've curled against in their rink. And, of course, the Canadian teams are always a favorite. Women from Inuvik here, and so it's kind of nice to get together again once a year. So that's an annual kind of thing we do.
Well, nice. I hope you all enjoy yourself, and I thank you very much for visiting with us, and I wish you good luck on the rest of your games for this Bonspiel.
Thank you.
Expect that you'll do very well. So, Eric is back with us. We've just got a couple of minutes. Do you think curling is a growing sport in Fairbanks with the increase attention because of our winning women's team? Do you think we'll have increased membership as time goes on here?
I hope so. It is a fun sport, and all the club members really enjoy it. And we don't have a real good youth program right at this point because there's a lot of other things that happen in the wintertime that other, you know, high school and junior high school age people are interested in too. So there's a
hockey
lot of competition
and,
for
right,
time.
Skating and so on.
Yeah, and it the people that generally are starting out are people that have graduated from high school and they might be newly married and settled in the community and they're looking for an activity to get involved with on a family level, you know, husband and wife, in the wintertime, and curling is a good avenue for them to take.
Curling seems very democratic. It's people from all different economic and social strata
mm-hmm.
curl.
Right, they do.
Golf is sort of traditionally called a rich person sport because it's very expensive to do and so on, but that doesn't seem to be one of the constraints with curling.
Not here in Fairbanks. Our membership is $150 for the year. That includes a $50 membership fee plus a $100 ice fee. And, you know, that's very reasonable because you can curl as much as you want to. There are always entry fees for things like this, the Bonspiel. It's $120 per rink for 5 days of curling.
But that's per rink. That's divided
right.
up between the four.
Four people, right.
The four people.
Yeah.
That's a lot of entertainment for pretty reasonable.
Yes, it is.
And
like here at the at our international, the out-of-town rinks all get dinner on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night, courtesy of the curling club, and then there's the awards banquet on Sunday, and there's no cost for that for them, and we try to make it reasonable during the out-of-town rink stay.
The curling club is also the site of a lot of weddings in Fairbanks.
In the summertime.
In the summer, you rent out the club for
right.
other social occasions?
Yes, we do, only during the summer when there's no curling going on. Anytime that the club is open, say from October 1st through the first week in April, it's not available for rentals, but during the summer months it is, and there are a lot of weddings. Some of the high schools have their proms here.
Oh, really?
And quite a bit. There's activity going on every weekend in terms of private functions.
For those people who've never been down to the curling club, what is the address? Because the public is invited to watch this competition that's going on.
Always.
Always.
Yes.
There's a sort of theater seats here and glass windows that look out over the sheets.
Mm-hmm.
And then upstairs for members only, there's a bar and
a club room.
A
right.
club room.
Yeah.
But the general public is invited to come to the area where we're sitting in now, which, mm-hmm. as I say, has a wonderful view of the action. And so what is the address?
It's 1962 Second Avenue. Probably more from people are familiar with the with Groudon Field, where the goal planners play,
mm-hmm.
Than the curling club. But the curling club is right across the street from the goal planners park.
And clearly marked with a big sign.
You bet. Lots of cars parked around it this weekend.
Well, what seems to be happening out here? Who's are they? How long does one
end? Yeah, one time down the ice is called an end. Each
okay.
game plays eight ends, each game plays eight ends, and each end takes about 15 minutes. So, if the score is close,
you should reasonably expect about 2 hours for a game.
Okay, because these rinks all started at about 11 when we went on the air, and so they're sort of in the middle of their game.
Correct.
Now. Is that,
that's
is that
right.
correct?
Yeah. About halfway through.
How do they seem to be doing?
Well, on sheet one, it's a pretty close game. The score is 6-3 after three ends. They're playing in the fourth end right now. On sheet three, one team is up 7-1, so they're way ahead. I might mention that a normal score per end is only about 1 or 2 points. So if you get 5 or 6 points behind, you have a real hard time coming back to win that game.
So 7-1 seems like an almost insurmountable edge that this team has over.
Unless the whole team falls apart, right?
which is unlikely. They seem to be in fine form here. Are those local teams or is?
Yes, on sheet three, both are from Fairbanks. On sheet one, there's two teams from Whitehorse playing each other.
Okay, so there's full action here. You will be continuing until tomorrow evening.
The right. finals are tomorrow afternoon at 1:00.
Okay.
And there's possibility of two games going a second round if the undefeated team loses.
Okay, so the big finale will start at 1:00
tomorrow. 1:00
tomorrow
afternoon.
And I would like to thank you very much for having us down here. This has been I don't know how this has sounded to our audience, but it's been great fun for me to watch it and hear it at the same time. We've been coming live from the Curling Club, and I've been talking with Eric Jaswick, who is the current public relations person here. I'd like to thank Carla Tonella, the executive producer, and Phil Filkowski for assisting on the engineering here. I love having this live remote equipment so that we can go around town and cover things live as they're happening. I look forward to talking to you all next week. This has been Home Fires Radio Show. I'm your host, Patty Kostelic. Have a very nice weekend.
And this is KUAC FM in Fairbanks. It's now a few seconds before 1 minute after 12 o'clock and time for National Press Club.
Support for this program is provided by NPR member stations and the NPR News and Information Fund. Contributors include the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the General Foods Corporation, worldwide processor of packaged grocery and meat products. For Midwestern coverage, the Joyce Foundation. And for coverage of defense policy issues, the CS Fund. This program is a production of National Public Radio, which is solely responsible for its content.
From National Public Radio in Washington, D.C., this is another in the continuing series of programs from the National Press Club. I'm Frank Stasio. Today's guest speaker is Republican Senator Dave Duerenberger of Minnesota, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Good afternoon and welcome to the National Press Club. My name is David Hess of Knight Ridder Newspapers, and I'm president of the club. I'd like to welcome my fellow club members and their guests in the audience today, as well as those of you who are listening to this program over one of the 303 national public radio stations or watching on one of the 1,800 cable systems affiliated with C-SPAN, the Cable Satellite Public Affairs Network. Before going any further, I'd like to remind our members of some upcoming events. Our luncheon speaker tomorrow, March 27th, will be Education Secretary William Bennett. He will be followed on Thursday, March 28th, by Office of Management and Budget Director David Stockman. Next month, our guests include EPA Administrator Lee Thomas on April 3rd, Turkish Prime Minister Turgut Özal on April 4th, and Stanley Karno, author of Vietnam, A History, on April 17th. I'd like to remind those of you in the audience that if you have any questions for our speaker today, and I trust you will, please write them on the cards furnished at your tables, and I'll pass them up to me. I'll ask as many as time allows. I'd like now to introduce the guests at our head table, and I ask our guests please to stand briefly when their names are read, and please, if the audience would withhold its applause until I've read all of the names. To my left, Roger Runnigan, the Rochester Post Bulletin of Minnesota, Mike Flaherty, Ottawa News Service, Skip Loescher, Washington Bureau Chief, Midwest Communications, Joel Brinkley of the New York Times, Eleanor Clift of Newsweek Magazine, and member of our Speakers Committee who organized today's luncheon, Bernie McMahon, Staff Director of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, Catherine Kaler, Newhouse News Service and Chairman of the Club's Speakers Committee, David Deer, Deer Publication and Radio Incorporated, and Vice Chairman of the Club's Board of Governors, Steve Ockenden, Senator Durenberger's Defense Legislative Aide, Jim McGregor, Duluth, Minnesota News Tribune, Mireille Grandgenois, Gannett News Service, Steve Berg of the Minneapolis Star and Tribune, and Tom Brandt of the Washington Times. As the new chairman of the Select Committee on Intelligence, Senator David Durenberger of Minnesota has a hard act to follow. His predecessor, Senator Barry Goldwater, was brash and outspoken. He had no trouble telling anyone where to get off, including the president, which he did last year when he learned that the CIA was involved in mining Nicaragua's harbors. Senator Durenberger, on the other hand, has built a reputation over the years for prudence and quiet reflection in the 7 years he's been in Congress. But now that he's in the Goldwater seat, there are some indications that he's changing his ways. So before you start thinking that today you're in for a professorial lecture on Central America, listen to some of these comments that the quiet man from Minnesota has made recently. In an interview with the Minneapolis Star Tribune, he described CIA Director William Casey as, quote, a 2 on a scale of 10, unquote. On the mining of the Nicaraguan harbors, he said, quote, indiscriminate use of mining gives people around the world the opportunity to say that Ronald Reagan is crazy, unquote. Senator Durenberger may not have topped Senator Goldwater's rhetoric yet, but that's not a bad beginning. And like Goldwater, he's giving the White House fits on Central America policy. He opposes the covert aid that President Reagan wants for the rebels in Nicaragua, although he did vote for it last year. He now thinks the CIA should get out of Nicaragua and that the administration should be totally open about its assistance to the Contras. With President Reagan's Central America policy facing a do-or-die vote next month, Senator Durenberger is fond of saying, there's only one way to get to Nicaragua, and that's through Capitol Hill. Senator Durenberger is a native of Collegeville, Minnesota. A lawyer and a former Army intelligence officer, he is the author of a book called Neither Madmen Nor Messiahs, A Policy of National Security for America. He is here today to tell us where he thinks that middle road is in Central America, and I give you Senator David Durenberger.